Hey everyone, welcome back to Huron County Author Talk, a podcast where a group of talented local authors share their insights on the remarkable, imaginative, and nuanced world of writing. I'm your host, Hamilton Baker of the Huron County Library, and I'm excited to bring you another episode in our show. So whether you're a fan, an aspiring author, or a reader interested in hearing more about this creative process, this show's for you. In this episode, I sat down with one of Huron County's local authors, Haley Linfield, at the Goderich Library. In our interview, Haley talks about her recent release, Rail Ties, a story of love moments captured on the GTG. She also talks about why she writes, how she writes, where she gets inspiration from, and much more. Enjoy. How long have you been writing, and what kind of books do you write?
So I've been writing with the aim of, seriously, in order to publish, probably since about 2000 okay. and to something early 2000, so 20 years.
Right.
And what kind of books do I write? So I started out mostly writing short stories, essays, just anything to get experience, to get like publishings, you know, mm-hmm. on my name. And I've only published two novels. One in 2012, and one more recently in 2022. Mm. So 10 years apart. So I'm not very prolific with my books.
Right. And do you remember? Go ahead. Sorry.
I was gonna say, the types of writing that I do. So when I was younger, I actually wrote more like horror stories, uh-huh. sort of darker, edgier short stories, but. And my first book that I published, they classified it as new adult, meaning too much sex in it for a young adult. But sort of that idea.
Right. Gotcha.
A young audience, a young female audience. Mm-hmm. And then I would say my recent one, I would say it's literary fiction.
Okay.
That's how I would classify it.
It's evolved a bit somewhat.
Yeah. I wouldn't say I write only one type. Mm. I don't write as in, like, for my income. So my purpose in writing is when I feel like there's something that I want to say or something that I want to express, and I can't do it just in simple terms. I feel like if I write a story around it, it expresses it in a way that is more meaningful or says a greater truth.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yes. Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah. Which, I mean, that maybe answers my next question, which was, like, when you started writing 2000, whatever it was. Do you remember why you started? Was that why, what you just said, which was to be...
That's a good question. Yeah. I guess I've always enjoyed writing.
Right.
Like when I was in university, I wrote really bad poems, mm-hmm. which at the time they seemed really good and deep, but I'm sure if I read them now, they'd be really bad and
yeah.
embarrassing and cringy.
Yeah.
And I lived in Japan for a year. Years ago after university, but I had this really long commute on the train to my job, and I found that I did a lot of writing on the train. I'd come up with, you know, I'd be inspired by the people that I would see on the trains, and I would write stories about them or around those characters. Mm-hmm. And anyway, and it kind of just evolved. I've just always enjoyed doing it, but I never had really done it seriously. Like, I hadn't really taken the time to develop writing as a craft until probably around after I got married. Just had a bit more time to myself.
Right.
Yeah.
Huh. So that's interesting. Yeah. There wasn't like a... Because a lot of people I've talked to, right, you start when you're young. Like, I started when I was a kid. And it just... Well, I guess it's similar. Yeah.
You start when you're young, and it
evolves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know if I told you this before, but the very first thing I ever wrote actually was, my sister and I, we're quite close in age, and we used to take family vacations on our boat up in Georgian Bay for like weeks at a time. So it would just be the two of us with long days, just not really with anything to do. And so we developed this game that we played with our deck of cards, where we would use the kings, the queens, and the jacks, and we would like make stories out of them. And we developed like this whole like world of the hearts, the clubs, the diamonds, and the spades, and the they would be fighting each other, and they were like, you know, the queen of spades was having an affair with the king of hearts and that kind of thing. And so the first story I ever wrote, I sat down and I wrote it like a story, like developed this world that we'd created into a children's story. And I never actually finished it, but it got longer and longer. It's like probably 500 pages long, and I've just never done anything with it because it's kind of silly. But
500 pages, really?
Yeah, well, probably at least, I would say. Yeah.
Right. Oh, wow. So, you, yeah, that's quite a bit.
It's on a
yeah.
floppy disk somewhere, I think.
Oh, really? Wow. Well, it's impressive you still have it. Like, the first story I wrote when I was 8 years old, it was on my parents' computer, and I think the computer got a virus or something, and everything got wiped, and oh, there goes my story.
Yeah.
So, like, the first one I wrote is gone forever. Oh. Yeah.
Well, I was older than I was probably 20, 19 or 20.
Okay, yeah, yeah. You're a bit older, yeah.
Yeah.
But there were still floppy disks? Yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I still have floppy disks. Yeah.
In the 90s, I guess there was floppy disks in the 90s.
Yeah, this would have been 94, 95.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Now you know how old I am.
Right. But yeah, actually, the one thing you just said there, it's one of my questions. Okay, because you were talking about not finishing. Like, you did 500 pages.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
I have lots of things that aren't finished.
So yeah, I guess my question is, how many books or stories or whatnot did you write before you published your first?
Like, including stories?
Yeah, I guess, like, maybe that's hard to even get a number on.
Probably.
Like, short story.
Hundreds, but certainly between 10 and 100, like, dozens for sure.
Like, short stories. Yeah, if you count short stories, all those stories
absolutely,
that you've written.
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All kinds of things.
Right.
And even ones that I've completed and maybe submitted to different places, but never published. Mm-hmm. Yeah, dozens and dozens and dozens. And probably hundreds of stories that I've started writing and then kind of just lost the thread, kind of lost the view of where it was going to go or lost interest in it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've definitely started way more than things that have ever come to light.
Because that's another one of my questions. Like, how many stories have you started that you never finished? So yeah, that's, you're answering
yeah.
that question
and,
already.
And
yeah.
I always keep, I have all kinds of, like, you know, books, you know, things that, like, books, like, journals, you know, that I'd write in, like, mm-hmm. when I'm taking trains or stuff like that, where I'd have ideas for stories. Mm-hmm. And I always keep them, because I always think, oh, I'm going to go back to this story. I'm going to revisit this at some point.
Right.
And every once in a while, I, like, revisit it and then don't do anything with it again. But I still think, I still like the ideas. Mm-hmm. I just... not enough to put the time in to develop a story around it.
Right.
But once in a while, like a couple.
Okay. Because, yeah, like my experience and I think the people I've talked to too is you really, in order to go all the way with a book, you really have to love that idea and really
yeah.
have to love that story
yes.
because otherwise you're not going to see it to the end.
Absolutely. Yeah,
yeah.
That's totally true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I find most of the stories that I've written completely through, I've gotten the idea fairly suddenly and like sort of in a frenzy, like write the first draft really quickly
okay.
rather than just get the idea and then think, oh, that would be a cool story and then try to come back to it.
Mm-hmm.
I tend not to. It doesn't seem to happen. For me anyway, I get it more like a frenzied spurt of mm-hmm. writing.
So then that's, I mean, you and I sound similar where even if you're working, I guess it's happened to me before, where you're working on something and you might be floundering a little bit and then you have an idea for something else and you just, yeah, you don't, like you were just saying, you don't wait till later. You don't just let that idea settle and say, well, I'm working on this now. I'm going to wait till I finish this.
Yeah.
And then my
yeah.
idea that I just had, I'll do it later. It's like, no, you do it now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, same.
I think part of that is because I'm not, I don't think of writing... now anyway, maybe when I was younger I wanted to think of writing as a way of making income. I don't think of it in that way now. Now I think of it in, I want to write because I, as I said before, because I have this idea that I want to express in some way. So, and so that gives me the freedom to, if I'm not interested in doing that, I'm just not going to do it. I'm not going to stick with
it. You're not forced to do something because you need income out of it.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Which is another, related to another question I have. Is writing predominantly a pleasure for you, a struggle, or both, or something in between?
It's still both. I mean, it's pleasurable, but I often get a sense that I should be writing more than I am. And so that kind of takes the joy out of it a little bit. Mm-hmm. But no, when I do get an idea that I want to express and put down, I really enjoy it. The getting into the zone and the craft of writing itself. Mm-hmm. So yeah, in that sense, it's definitely a pleasure for me.
Yeah, like another way to look at it, I know I've asked the same question a little bit differently. Does it rejuvenate you or does it deplete you? So it sounds like, yeah, like...
No, definitely rejuvenates
you. It rejuvenates you, yeah.
It inspires me.
The depleting thing is when you're not writing. Well, yes. I don't know if
depleting is when I feel word. Like when I feel like I should be writing, but I'm not, or I don't have the energy or the frame of mind to focus. I find I really have to be... I have to be in the right frame of mind. I can't have something else that I feel like I should be doing. Fortunately, I never feel like I should be doing housework or stuff like that. Oh. So that's not something that gets in the way. Just other stuff.
Yeah.
Things with my kids is more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Spending time with them.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's spring of 2023. In terms of writing, what are you focused on these days?
So since the fall, since this past fall, I've been focused mainly in selling or marketing Rail Ties, which is the book that I put out in the fall. I'm still sort of in marketing mode for getting this one moving. But I did actually just kind of start a new idea. I've become interested in the concept of time. I don't know why. Maybe it's age or something like that. And I explored it a little bit in Rail Ties too. But I've been kind of trying to explore that idea in a story and kind of taking an idea that I started a couple years ago and kind of put aside and kind of putting it together with sort of timelessness as a theme. Sort of the idea of things happening in our lives when time is not linear, as though time just exists all times at once. Anyway, I want to explore something like that with my next story. So I haven't quite figured out where, but I've got some characters and some general ideas.
Yeah, it sounds really interesting, like timeless, and the concept of time.
Yeah.
I mean, it's maybe a little bit... It's related, but not... Obviously, my grandparents and I were talking about it earlier. Like, my grandpa had back surgery when he was, like, 20 or 21 before they had any kids. And my grandma was saying, like, if you didn't have that back surgery, the doctor said you would have been in a wheelchair in 2 years. He had a really bad problem with his back. And if you had been in a wheelchair in 2 years, if we had just stayed, didn't do the surgery, we wouldn't have moved. And... your father wouldn't have met your mother, and you wouldn't it's not exactly time, but it's kind of like, it was just, we were talking about how it's crazy how just one little decision to have surgery probably made the difference between kind of me existing and not.
Like kind of like a Sliding Doors. Remember the movie Sliding Doors?
I think Paltrow? I've heard of it.
Anyway, it only takes like one moment, you know, someone catches the train or someone misses the train, and so the life branches out in two completely different directions.
Right.
But that's just one example. It could be, you know, there's an infinite number of decisions that you make every day.
Yeah, exactly.
So are there an infinite number of timelines and parallel universes that could exist? And I don't know. I think the concept is interesting, or it could be interesting if it were done in a particular way.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's kind of not exactly, but related, like we were talking about.
Yeah.
crazy to think about how it can just completely change everything, just one little decision. But actually, I did remember what I was going to say a couple minutes ago, which was, because you're only writing usually when you're in the right mindset. Mm-hmm. So you never, because I did this, my creative writer teacher taught us, it's a good idea to do 15 minutes a day, even if you don't feel like it. Did you ever try that, or did you?
No. I enjoyed being a part in the past. I've been in a couple of different writers' groups, and I always enjoyed at the beginning of a writer's group, we would always do like a writing prompt. Somebody would like, you know, the red hat on the floor, and everybody would take 10 minutes and write about the red hat on the floor. And I enjoyed doing that. And I actually found like some of them like inspired like little stories or essays that I've published or that have gone places. So I should do that more, but no, I don't.
Right. Yeah.
as a rule.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I know of both authors. Like some authors swear by like writing every day for a minimum amount, and some they're not necessarily doing that, and they also are. They can be prolific without having that rule, I guess, in mind. So
I'm not prolific, but
you and I both. Yeah. Yeah.
And I have a writing thing that I have to do at work as well, which is not like, you know, so it's not creative writing, it's not fictional writing. So I don't know, maybe that takes some energy out of me.
Yeah, probably.
To do that.
It's probably the same with jobs in general, right? Jobs, sometimes you just can't write because you're too busy with jobs and life and everything, right?
Yeah.
So it just gets in the way.
Yeah, so I was a stay-at-home mom for 10 years, close to 10 years. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to do quite a bit of writing in that time period. And since I've been working back in the workforce again, I definitely am not writing as much.
Right.
Yeah.
It just takes away your time, right? Like, it just can't help it.
And when you have the time, you're just a bit more tired. And not that, like, being a stay-at-home mom, like, you've got kids around too, but you can, I found anyway, I could make the time to write.
You kind of structure your day around it. Yeah.
Yeah.
You released your second novel, Rail Ties, A Story of Love, Moments Captured on the G2G. So let's explore that book a little bit since it came out recently.
Yeah.
And the subtitle gives us a good idea what it's about, but maybe if you want to elaborate on it a bit and tell us what it's all about.
Yeah, so the G2G is the Goderich to Guelph, or the Guelph to Goderich rail trail, which is a hiking and biking trail that goes from Goderich to Guelph, and it's the old CPR rail line. Or it was the old CPR rail line. When the trains stopped running, they ripped up the tracks, and now it's a great hiking and biking trail. And I've said this before, but I was out walking on the trail, and I've kind of got this timeless thing going in my head lately. I'm not sure why, but I was thinking about how it's kind of cool that here I am, you know, walking in this spot, and 100 years ago someone was in this exact same spot, but maybe on a train, and maybe we're both thinking about the same. So I was thinking about relationships and my love life, and I'm thinking 100 years ago someone was maybe sitting on a train thinking about their relationship and their love life, and maybe like the exact same thoughts, like, because maybe they were in the exact same stage of a relationship. So then I had this idea to write a series of short stories, very short stories, that are only connected through place, but also through the theme of relationships. So every short story represents one stage in a typical romantic relationship, but it takes place throughout time. So the first story takes place in 1904 when they first started building the train, the train tracks. The second story, takes place, I can't remember, in like 2008 on a cross-country meet, and like, so each story is at a different moment in time, so it's not chronological, it just jumps around through time to give the impression that, sort of to emphasize the idea how love itself is timeless. It doesn't matter where it is in time, this love story is the same.
Right.
whether it's 1904 or 2004, people still fall in love and fall out of love in the same way that they did. So that's what the story is about. And I wrote it and connected with the G2G Rail Trail. And so we're selling it as a fundraiser for the G2G Rail Trail. So all of its proceeds, all the proceeds that it makes are donated to the Rail Trail for trail maintenance and big projects as well.
That's great. Yeah. Hopefully it does really well then. Yeah. Helps the G2G.
Yeah. So far so good.
Yeah. Like, good.
Yeah.
Because I guess it's been out for...
Since November. So it was great that we got it out before Christmas, because we got lots of sales before Christmas. So so that was good. And so then there's still few more that, you know, trickling still. So
good.
Yeah, and once it's all sold, that's it. Like it's a one print run.
Oh, you did one print run.
One print run, and that's
certain
it.
Number of books, and that's all. Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. So we're good.
You're working through it. Yeah.
But there's still there's still more.
Good. Who is your favorite character in the book, and why?
In Rail Ties.
Yeah, in Rail Ties.
Who is my favorite character? That's a good question.
I guess I was thinking, because there's so many probably.
There's lots.
So many little stories, lots of characters, right?
Yeah,
so
absolutely. I'm trying to think which one. Okay, I think my favorite character is in the story. That's called Saying Goodbye, which is so the typical love story, the arc of the story is starting out falling in love, and you know, that first kiss and first time and marriage, and you know, happily being married, and then maybe the downs of marriage and divorce and finding love again. But that's not everybody's story, right? Some people find love and that's it, and it stays. So or they lose love in losing a partner. So I think my favorite character is an old lady who is spreading her husband's ashes off one of the train bridges on the trail. And it takes place in the 1960s, so the tracks are still there. And she's just plucky, and she's tough, and her children don't want her going out in the winter and possibly slipping and falling because she might break a hip, and so she's not telling them, and she's just doing her own thing. And she's independent, and I like her as a character.
Sounds like a good, strong character.
And it's actually she wasn't actually in my first, second, or even third draft, and one of my friends who read it, she suggested, I think there should be this aspect of the love story, and I was like, I agree. So anyway, it was the last story that I actually wrote.
Oh, really?
It's not the last story in the book, but it's
the one that you added last.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's funny how, your favorite character is the one that came in at the end,
And maybe because pretty much all the other characters in the story, not all of them, but there's mostly two characters, because it's a love story, right?
Right.
But this is one where it's just her, because she's alone now.
At the start of her story, he's already passed away.
So each story is only a few pages long.
Right.
So they're very short, little. That's why the subtitle is Moments Captured on the G2G. It's not, you're not getting a full story, but you're getting a moment of time that illustrates this particular stage
in the relationship.
The relationship.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it sounds really good. Yeah. Okay. If you came across someone in the street and you could only tell them one thing about Rail Ties, what would you tell them?
I'd say it's a fundraiser, so go buy it.
Oh, that's a good answer.
It goes to charity.
Yeah.
I have had to say to people who are concerned that it might be too graphic, don't worry, there's no graphic.
Oh, yeah.
There's no graphic sex in it. Or
yeah, right.
I have said to people, I think it would be a really good book to do for book clubs. Mm. I think people would find lots to discuss about it right. for a book club setting.
Because everyone can relate, I guess, because everyone's, you know, most yeah, people everyone have experienced can relate. Love.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah and it's yeah. and it's easy to read because, you know, it's not like a book where it's going to take you, you know, some books take you a while to get into them because, mm-hmm. you know, they're building up the story. Mm-hmm. Because the stories, the individual stories are so small, I think it's easy to get into it. It's a fast read.
Right. Which, yeah, I know I've known people in book clubs, and yeah, sometimes the book clubs or books are a bit of a slog, like you were saying, like hard to get into.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I don't like about it. So
yeah.
That sounds like it would be a good thing for a book club.
And yeah. The other thing I'd say, the other piece of advice I would give people when they read it, and I actually kind of made an introductory in the book, just to keep in mind that these stories aren't meant to be read. Like, they're meant to be read individually. Like, the stories don't connect to each other.
Right.
But they still, taken together, they are meant to create one story arc.
Okay.
So it's not just each individual ones. That's why it's called A Story of Love. Because right. it's one potential
mm-hmm.
Story of a relationship.
Right.
Even though there's lots of different stories.
Okay. Which is an interesting, yeah, if you can read that and you kind of keep that in the back of your mind.
You could think of every single story could have every single chapter in it. But you're right. only getting one chapter of each of the story. But you're getting them in the right order.
Right.
To okay. create one love story.
Right. Oh, that sounds good. Yeah. yeah. Sounds interesting. How did you figure that all out? Like, it sounds like it might be a little challenging to structure it properly. Or maybe it was easy.
I just the idea just came to me, and I started out with only, you know, like there were only like five stories to start, and then I started sort of filling in the spaces of, you know, sort of the five main, you know, there's just the start of the crush, then there was the first kiss,
mm-hmm.
then there was the proposal, then there was marriage, and then there was divorce. So
right.
and then I filled in like all the other little parts
in between
to that.
Okay.
So there's I think 18, 17 or 18 different stories.
Okay.
Something like that.
So structuring wasn't really a challenge. It just kind of organically happened.
Yeah, I would say so.
Just filling in the gaps kind of thing. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So you also wrote The Truth About Dandelions, your first book.
I did.
If you had to pick a favorite between the two, which one would you pick?
A favorite? It's hard to...
You can base your answer off of whether one was your favorite to write or whether one was your favorite in terms of the final product, like the final...
I believe that Rail Ties is a better written book.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's more mature, and I think the writing is better. But The Truth About Dandelions is, it's fun. It's a, you know, there's, you don't have to think too deeply.
Right.
I mean, you can. There's some parts to it. But, yeah, they're just so, they're very different,
right.
very different books.
So it's kind of hard to compare, right?
It really is, yeah. The Truth About Dandelions, I wrote that over a long time. Like, it had a first draft that was so different, like not even the same story.
Oh, really?
To the final draft.
Mm-hmm.
And even when I submitted it to a publisher and was accepted with the publisher, after we went through the editing stage, those two drafts became vastly different as well.
Right.
Like, for example, I felt really strongly the whole time I was writing it that I didn't want to give my character a name. Like, I didn't want... It was written in the first person, so it's not like it was awkward.
Right.
And that's from... Have you ever read Rebecca by Daphne du Maurier?
I haven't read it, no. I haven't, no.
So, the character in Rebecca... It's not Rebecca. The second Mrs. de Winter. We never find out her first name.
Oh, okay.
We never learn it. And, you know, and when I read that, it didn't even occur to me until, like, at the end. I'm like... Oh yeah, we never learned her name. Like it just naturally, it was so organic. Or So I was really struck by that. And the character in The Truth About Dandelions is very, very lacking in self-worth. And I liked the symbolism of her not feeling even worthy enough to share her name. Mm. Anyway, publisher did not like that idea. She had to have a name.
Right.
So she got a name.
Yeah. Okay.
And there were a lot of other changes as well. But that editing process that I went through with her, with the publisher and for The Truth About Dandelions, that was, I'm really grateful that I had that, and it really taught me a lot, mm-hmm. Just the process of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I learned a lot of things, not only about publishing, but about writing too, from going through that process.
Right.
With her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure. Because I remember getting feedback in school, and even just a small, like an author, what's it called, in residency or a
writer. Oh, author in residence?
Author in residence, yeah. There was an author in residence, and you submitted your work, and mine got accepted. And so she would critique everybody that got accepted, and then we went and met her for like 20 or 30 minutes. And even just that, which is a small thing, really helped me as a writer too. So it's kind of the same vein of just having that feedback from someone who has the experience.
Yeah, and things that, you know, when you learn it, I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. But it's just things that you never really thought about before. And, yeah.
Right, you kind of like, you don't know what you don't know.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. So in sum, yeah, it's hard to compare them, but I do believe that Rail Ties, I'm more proud of the writing in that.
And that's kind of my next point of, well, I guess more just realizing that maybe it's hard to compare also in the sense that they're written so far apart. Like, you, right, if you've improved, and that's, I'm sure it's the same with you, it's the same with me. As time goes on, you write, you get better, right? You get better as you write. So then even 2 years later, you look at something you wrote 2 years ago, it's like, oh, that's not as good as I can do, as the stuff I'm writing now. Or maybe you don't find that.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. Writing is one of those, like in other things in life, I definitely was better when I was younger.
Right.
Like, but writing, I think, is one of those things that you just can, as long as you keep at it,
right,
you continuously can get better. You
right.
continually improve just in the way you, just the way you express things and develop a picture of things.
Mm-hmm. Which I remember when I was younger thinking, how do you, because people would tell me, like older writers would tell me, you can get better. And I remember thinking, how can I get better than I am already? Like, I didn't quite understand. And I still don't think I fully understand how you actually have, how I've gotten better over the years. It just kind of happens from practice, and it just kind of develops on its own, basically, by experience.
Yeah, I don't know how it is, what I couldn't define it.
It's hard to point to one thing, right? It's like, oh yeah, that's what I did to get better.
Yeah.
It's not really, it's not that simple.
In some things, I mean, I was actually talking about this today with a coworker. In some ways, when I was in my 20s or even in my 30s, I was smarter than I am now. Like, and when I say smarter, I was sharper, I was faster.
Right.
I think I got things better. But I definitely think I am wiser, and I have a deeper understanding of things now.
Right.
And I think that's what comes through. That's what you need in writing.
Right. Yeah, that's, that, I mean,
picking things up quickly doesn't really help you with, as a writer, but having a greater depth of understanding of, even of insignificant, seemingly insignificant events,
mm-hmm.
That
just deepens your writing.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
So maybe that is the one thing we can point to.
Yeah.
Yeah, right there, you got it.
Yeah.
Okay, so
not that I'm great, not that I'm really wise, but
right, no.
It's all relative.
Relative to when you were 20s, right?
Yeah.
So your first book, was it traditionally published then? Because you had
a
publisher.
I had a publisher. It was a very small publisher, though. It was called Wolf on Water Publishing, so it wasn't like a big publisher.
Right.
So maybe halfsies.
Right.
I would say.
Because like this question is, did you always know you wanted to self-publish? Which, I mean, you didn't you didn't self-publish the first book.
When I first started writing, I don't think I'd even heard of self-publishing. It wasn't as much of a thing.
I guess, no, not in 2001, 2002 or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, I was still typing things out in Courier font because that's what it had to be with your word count on it and double spaced.
Oh,
like,
really?
And like mailed it in.
Right. I guess, yeah.
Places. So, to literary journals and things like that. That's how they wanted their things submitted. And
so it wasn't, self-publishing wasn't on your radar when you started?
Not at all.
No, it wouldn't have been, no. Okay.
No, so I really started learning more about the self-publishing world when The Truth About Dandelions came out. And my publisher gave me all these instructions about, well, I needed to have a blog, and I needed to have a website, and I needed to be on Goodreads, and I needed to join Twitter, and I needed to, like, join different groups on Twitter. Mm. And then once I did that, like, then you start, like, seeing... So when I was, like, marketing, basically doing the same self-publishing, like, marketing techniques that self-published authors would do, so...
Mm-hmm.
Giving free giveaways and things like that to get reviews and stuff. So I started reading more self-published authors, and many of them were so poorly edited. That's when I started my editing business.
Oh, okay.
Like, I can help you.
Right. Yeah.
This is not ready to be published yet.
No.
The whole idea of self-publishing, it would be wonderful for someone to just do it for me, for sure.
Right, yeah.
But with Rail Ties, I just didn't even want to bother with any of that. I thought, I'm just going to do this myself, and I'm just going to, you know, partnered with the GDG and get my own editor and do it that way. So I'm not really selling online. It's on my website, but I'm not selling, you know, digital copies of it. So it's a more, individual project.
There's no ebook.
There's no ebook.
It's just the physical copy. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where do you find? I mean, we've touched on this a bit, but where do you find inspiration for your books, or is it not about inspiration for you?
I tend to find inspiration when I'm out walking my dogs.
Me too.
When I'm out by myself, right? Because there's no distractions there, right? Mm-hmm. There's no phone. I'm not on a phone. There's not usually another person distracting me with conversation. I'm by myself. And often when I'm out in the woods or something like that, or on the GDG rail trail or things like that, that's when ideas tend to come to me the most, I would say.
Right.
For sure. Yes. Actually, almost exclusively. That's my time to be by myself.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd say jogging, but I haven't jogged in weeks.
No. And I'm just thinking now, because the idea for my book that I've been working on for almost 7 years, it came when I was walking for a month solid. Every time I walked her, I would have more ideas about this book. So it's funny how same idea.
Yeah, although not exclusively. I've written the first draft of another novel that I kind of stopped working on it just because I'm not happy where it's gone, and I'm not really sure how to change it.
Right.
But I was actually inspired by that, actually by a painting that I saw at an art gallery, and I was just so struck by this painting, and then I researched the character in the painting, and I just developed a whole story around not the specific character, but somebody else that skeleton of a story happened to somebody in a more modern day. Mm-hmm. So every once in a while, like, something like that will spark an idea as well. But generally when I'm out by myself.
Right, yeah. And I just, do you like bring a notebook or something? I just remember when I was getting all these ideas, we could take my phone, and I would have an idea, and I would just put it in my phone.
Yeah, I do a voice memo.
Right, or that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you use your phone for that, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is one of the biggest challenges you faced as a writer, specifically in terms of the craft?
The craft itself?
The craft itself. One of the biggest challenges either you faced historically or previously or even nowadays?
I don't know about the craft itself, mm-hmm. really. I don't know that I find that to be as much of a challenge. I mean, I guess it's hard to take criticism for anybody.
Yeah.
But that isn't to say that I can't take criticism and that I can't improve based on that criticism.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't say that is a challenge for me. Sounds like I'm not saying like I'm a great writer, but
right.
like I don't necessarily struggle with how to write or the words themselves.
Or even certain elements. I guess I'm thinking like some struggle with dialogue or some struggle with setting or like character development, plot, like something in.
Yeah, I would say setting actually.
Okay.
I tend to like avoid, you know, when I'm reading books, sometimes I skip over setting description, especially if it's long setting. And so I could write a whole book without the setting.
Right. Yeah.
I'm like, I guess, does it matter where they are?
Right. Exactly.
And I would say I'm not as good at plot as I think character development is what I'm best at.
Mm-hmm.
But the structure of the plot, mm-hmm. figuring that part out.
Like the pacing. I mean, we talked about pacing before with a couple of the others.
Yeah. My mother-in-law actually is really keen on, there's some author who sells, you know, advice about how to structure, I can't remember his name, you know, but he's got like a whole formula of arcs, story arcs and what it should be. And it just makes me feel like I'm in like grade 9 English class.
Right.
And I'm like, I'm not interested in that. I just want to like write the story the way I feel the story should be.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, charting it out on like storyboarding or charting it on the wall, I don't tend to do that. And maybe I should.
Well, I've heard about, like, some authors do and some authors don't. Like, I think it's just however it works for you,
yeah.
right? It seems to be anyway. Some can't do it without it, and some hate doing it that way, right? So
I think I enjoy dialogue and character development the best. And when I say dialogue, sometimes I even I don't know if the right term is blocking within dialogue. You know, he said as he sat back in his chair versus just what he said, like putting it's kind of like setting, putting the setting around the dialogue.
Right.
Sometimes I realize, oh yeah, I have to go back and like do that. I can't just make it like a script.
Right. Right. I'm the same way. Yeah. He said, and she said, and then you don't have to put any dialogue tags for a while. And then you put a dialogue tag and that's all it is basically. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But adding in a nod or a scratch of the head
or
leaning back.
An editor read one of my stories and she said, it seems like all of your characters are smiling and nodding and blinking all the time.
Right.
I'm like, oh, okay, I guess I have to be a bit more.
Got to be a little bit more elaborate on those.
Yeah.
Right. No, I think, we're similar in that sense.
Yeah.
And same with the dialogue and character development versus setting. I'm reading on the same way. I skip setting. Or I'll just be like, oh, hurry up. I just try and rush through the setting
because
it's not, to me, it's not as enjoyable
I
to
agree.
Read.
Yeah.
Do you do any research? If so, how do you go about doing your research?
Yeah. Like for Rail Ties, I definitely did research. I actually, I looked through the Huron County, the digitized newspapers,
mm-hmm.
To find, the actual newspaper articles, you know, when the rail was being built and when the first train left the station,
mm-hmm.
And included those in the book as well. Other things like, so there was one of the stories in Rail Ties, takes place in 93 or something, 92, 93, something like that, down at the beach where, so it's now Beach Street Station, but of course, from my whole childhood, it was just the old CPR station that was farther away from where it is now.
It was just sitting there, yeah.
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 But So I have a character, and her friends are all climbing up on the top of the station roof. Mm-hmm. And I have a scene where she pauses on the railroad tracks and looks at them. And then I started questioning, were the railroad tracks there in 1993 or weren't they? When did they actually tear them up?
Right.
And that was really hard to find an answer, actually.
Oh, really?
And I think, I don't remember what the result was.
Because maybe it didn't make the news when they were ripping the railway up.
Yeah, and it's not because they didn't rip up it all like at once, right? Different sections got ripped up at different times.
Right.
And I'm trying to like I was around then, like trying to think of my own memories. I'm like, well, I don't really remember. And like,
because you weren't going around looking for railroad tracks.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. And other things like, I remember there, you know, there's a spring down there. It used to be, it's a lot neater than it used to be. And it used to be this old, I don't know, just spring that would come out of the ground. And my grandmother, when we would go to the beach and we'd walk back up the hill, she'd always take us there to wash the sand off our feet. And it had this really, really strong, like, irony smell. Mm-hmm. And anyway, and I was describing that. And yeah, I just needed, like, feedback from other people. Because, you know, your memories aren't always accurate. You know, right. You remember things that you think are real, but then they're actually not, or you're combining memories. So
yeah.
So I contacted other people in town, you know, who maybe had knowledge of, you know, when things happened, just to get their take. So that kind of research, just because I wanted it to be as accurate as possible. Cause you know, there's always someone who's, hey, that's not the way it was.
Right. Yeah, like, exactly.
It's fiction.
Yeah. It doesn't happen. But it's good to maybe just make sure, like, oh yeah.
Yeah. And I did some research on the different, you know, when the train, like building the tracks, and oh my, it was so complicated, you know, so many, this train line and that train line I was going to do, and then this one reneged, and then this, and that, and...
Sounds hard to piece it all together.
And it's like, I'm just not that. So, yeah, there's a disclaimer. This is fiction.
Right. It's not 100% accurate.
Yeah.
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 But, yeah. So, yeah, you did a bit of research on your own, talking to people. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, for The Truth About Dandelions, I didn't really do any research on that because it's completely a fictional story. Yeah.
It's not based. Yeah. I guess, is it based around here?
No.
It's not.
It's actually, it takes place in Ottawa, which is where I went to university.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I mean, even than that, I did a little bit of research. It's a little bit of a critique on fundamentalist religion as well.
Okay.
I described some different churches, and I sort of, you know, like Baptist fundamentalist, that's not the same thing, but the character moves to London, England, and I wanted to know, are there fundamentalist churches in London, England, or is it mostly an American thing? Like, I don't want to, like,
right.
So that kind of research I did.
You did a little bit, yeah, with that one too.
Okay. Still, it's fictional, but
right.
I want it to be within the realm of possibility.
Yeah, yeah. What other authors are you friends with, and how have they helped you become a better writer?
I don't know that I'm really friends with. I mean, I've been in different writers' groups, and that has been tremendously helpful in the past in, you know, mostly helpful in just forcing you to get out there and share your work, which is, as you know, it can be very challenging to be brave enough to share your work with anybody.
Right.
And being able to do that with other writers, it's good experience, and it encourages you to keep on writing. So in that sense, other writers that I've been involved with have certainly been tremendously helpful.
Mm-hmm.
What was the question?
Basically, who are you what other authors, maybe not necessarily, but other authors you've come into contact with, I guess is a better way to put that, and how have they helped you become a better writer, which... You touched on, which is just getting out there and sharing your work.
Yeah, and sharing critique with each other, like giving, you know, this is an idea that I had, or you know, read something and get feedback from them, and And, you know, you can ask your friends for feedback, but often the feedback is like, yeah, that was really nice.
Right.
And so writers know what kind of feedback you want, you know, or what kind of feedback you need would be more beneficial to you.
Right, because they're also writing and learning. Yeah. You're kind of learning together, basically, on how to critique each other. And So
I find it's actually easier to get feedback from people that you're not super close friends with.
Right.
Because when you're really close friends, you don't want to say you don't like something or you want to, you think something should be improved.
Right. You
like,
want to be nice.
Yeah. So
to your friend. Yeah.
Yeah. It's better to. I think you get more valuable feedback when you know you're connected, but you're not necessarily.
You're just acquaintances. Friends.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, that's good. Because, yeah, I'd say the same thing because I went to college and did, like, an elective creative writing, and that class was really helpful. Again, same idea as what you're talking about. Other writers, you're critiquing each other's work, and you're not friends, but you're, you know, your classmates or your acquaintances, and they do give good constructive feedback because, they don't worry as much about hurting your feelings, I guess.
Yeah, and maybe that has come with maturity or experience with writing and getting feedback. I'm totally good with getting like critique now. Like,
okay.
I welcome it. Like I want you to tell me every thought you had when you read this about what could be better. Not that I'm going to like implement every single thing that you say, but I want to know every single thing. I don't want you to sugarcoat things or
right, because you know now after a certain experience, even I'm getting there too, that sugarcoating things, you don't learn as much, you won't improve your writing as much, right?
Because
even like you say, if it's not all implemented, it's still good to hear what's going through your mind when you're reading this this work.
The worst feedback you can get, I think, that I can get from writing is it was nice.
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah,
I interpret that as you didn't enjoy it at all. That's right. How I interpret that.
Oh yeah,
you have nothing. Yeah. It left no feeling for you at all.
Nothing. So. Right. Yeah. Exactly. So that's.
And I want to evoke feeling. I want to evoke like a reaction.
Right. You want something to happen when someone reads your work. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not just
be completely forgettable.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you could tell your younger writing self anything, what would it be?
Don't be afraid to put it out there. Don't worry about being criticized or don't worry about being someone saying it's no good. Just keep putting it out there and put more and more out there and submit as much as you can.
Right. Because how long, that just reminds me. I wonder how long, maybe you don't know, but how long between when you kind of started writing seriously and you actually put something out there? Maybe it was right away.
Yeah, like I published, I published something pretty quickly. Like you just need to publish one thing, you know, and it, you get all excited and you get more inspired to do more and keep writing more.
Right. Yeah. So you did share something. Fairly quickly, like fairly early on.
Yeah, but not nearly as much as I could have.
But you could have shared a lot more.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
What was the best money you ever spent as a writer?
The best money I ever spent as a writer? That's a good question. I remember when we got our first inkjet printer, like that actually printed quickly and not just that was really great.
Well, that could be it. Yeah.
Because for big things, like for longer things, I always like to print it out and like write on it, like just to get a better sense of the organization of it. Mm-hmm. So I like to see things on paper.
Right. Which I'm the same way. Yeah. Print it out and then I mark it up.
And you know, with I haven't made that many financial investments in writing. Having rail ties printed was probably the biggest one, and I'm very happy that I've recouped all my money and have being able to donate some to the rail trail.
Right.
I'd still like to donate some more, but that was a big expense, and it was that was definitely a risk that I took to put that money out first.
Because you had to do all of it. So yeah, you had to print all the books in that run. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was maybe that was your best money I ever spent.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
Do you hide any secrets in your books that only a few people will find?
Not necessarily secrets, but there's definitely, I mean, I think every writer, I'm not writing about myself, but all of my experiences make my brain, right? Like,
they influence.
And definitely some things that are real, little snippets come out. Like, there's, if people know me really well, they will see the parts of me that in all of my characters.
Right.
Like, not that, you know, even just like little, like a little detail, like this person's wearing a bright blue beret. I have a bright blue beret.
Right.
Like, you know, like
little things.
Like little things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
In Rail Ties, the kids are doing a cross country race, and there's a girl has a crush on one of the boys, and anyway, another boy calls her Spaghetti Legs, and when I was in cross country, a boy called me Spaghetti Legs.
Really?
So like little things like that,
right,
are in there. You know, it's not me. It's like I never had a crush on any boy. Like it's a fictional story, but those little snippets are
just one little thing.
Yeah,
here and there.
There are definitely parts of me in there.
Right. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. How long on average does it take you to write a book? I guess because
on average?
I guess
so. I've only had two books, right? Yeah. The first one probably took 15 years.
Right.
And the second one took a year. So 7 years.
If you average it, yeah. 7 years on average. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I can't say, but if I was going to write another one, my guess is a long time. I'm a slow, not as I said, like I write in spurts, so I can write sections really quickly, but for a whole novel, that's going to take me a long time,
right.
Just for the organization and editing, and I'm a slow editor, and I like to, you know, even before I even send something to an editor, I wait a couple weeks and then read it again with fresh eyes, or even like wait a month or two and read it again with fresh eyes. So long time for me.
Yeah, multi-years.
Yeah.
Both of us.
But they say Anthony Dewar, who wrote All the Light We Cannot See, like it took him 10 years to write that one apparently.
Oh, really?
And it's one of my favorite books, so.
Right.
There you go.
Yeah, it can result in good books.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Which is good to know for us, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you believe in writer's block?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you experienced it?
All the time.
Sounds like, yeah. It sounds like, because, it takes inspiration for you to be in the right mindset. We touched on this already,
So many things can cause writer's block. Just not being in the right frame of mind, but also kind of just being frustrated with where you are in the story and not knowing where to go next. And, lots of things can cause writer's block.
And do you ever, I guess, like the traditional definition I think of writer's block is you sit down to write, right? And you've seen it in a movie or a show where the writer's sitting at the screen and nothing.
It's just, and nothing's coming.
I have nothing to type. Does like that happen to you ever or rarely?
I mean, I could always come up with something to write, but it might not be on my project that I'm trying to work on right now.
Right.
I might, you know, I want to work on this project. Oh, but I think I'm going to write this. I have this idea about this.
Right, so
I
divert somewhere else.
Yeah.
But you can always...
would not just sit there not writing anything.
Right.
I would get up and just do something else.
Right, yeah. Because, that's like the...
Just wasting time.
Yeah. I guess, now that I think about it more, I think writer's block, the way they talk about it, it's like, it goes for days.
Last longer.
Like, you sit down, and nothing comes, and 20 minutes later, you still got it, and then you give up. And then you go the next day, and it happens again. Like, I think that's, I don't know if anyone actually has that happen to them.
That would happen to me if I, you know, if there was one particular project that I wanted to work on and I wasn't feeling it.
Right.
That would definitely happen.
Right.
But I just wouldn't put myself in that position.
You always have something else you can
work on. I would either, I'd just work on something else.
Or, yeah. Or just.
Or not write at all.
Or not write at all for a week or whatever it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that's good. You don't have to experience that.
If I had like a writer's deadline, I'm sure I would experience that.
Right.
Like for even like for my writing that I have to do at work, which is not fictional writing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sometimes I'm like, oh, I don't know. Well, I have to come up with topics, right? But I don't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'd be blank with a topic.
Right.
Fortunately, I have coworkers. I'm like, give me a topic.
So you got help. Yeah.
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 Yeah. And then once I got a topic, I can just go with it. But
then you're good.
Yeah.
Last one.
Okay.
Out of all your unpublished stories,
mm-hmm.
Out of all your unpublished stories that you finished.
Okay. That I finished. Finished but not published.
Finished but not published, yeah.
Okay.
So those stories, do you have a favorite or one that you think is a really good story that should maybe be published one day?
Yeah. I wrote a story. It's called The Finch. I can't remember what it was called, The Finch now. But I was sort of... It's a short story, and it's playing with the, I guess it's eugenics, the idea where the government can control who has children. So it's sort of a futuristic dystopian story where, you know, someone who was once a proponent of this is a wonderful rule and this is for the good of society finds herself trapped in a situation where she is now going against the system. And I really like the story, and I sent it to maybe just one place, and it wasn't accepted, and I haven't continued with it, but I still think it's a good story, and I you know what, you've inspired me to revisit it and maybe rewrite some of it and find a place for it.
Well, because it does sound like a really good idea.
The idea, the premise
is definitely solid, right? And there's definitely something you can do with that, I think. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Huron County Author Talk with your host, Hamilton Baker. I hope you enjoyed my chat with Haley as much as I did. If you'd like to purchase one of her books, you can find them at local bookstores or on her website, haleylinfield.ca. That's haleylinfield.ca. You can also borrow both of her books from the library. Visit HuronCountyLibrary.ca to place a hold today. Stay tuned for the finale of Season 1 that will release in 2 weeks. The music on this program is Echo by Alan McKellis. Thanks for listening.